welcome back to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News, available all the time on npr.org/Bryant Park. I'm Allison Stewart, and yeah, this is a best of show for the most part, but the internet stops for no one. Stories will be emailed, videos will be viewed, blogs will be written. So because we care, here is a fresh edition of the stories that reached critical mass. It's the most. Ian, directing today.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
This is a most emailed, most viewed Chicago Tribune. Headline, Israeli immigrant solves 38-year-old math riddle. There's this old problem called the road coloring problem. It was posed in 1970 by a mathematician named Benjamin Weiss. And basically it said that it's possible to create a universal map that can direct people to arrive at a certain destination at the same time, regardless of where they started out from.
Wait, and is this like one of those word problems? A car, traveling, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I think that would be the SAT extreme simplification and maybe not exactly the same thing. But so hundreds and hundreds.
I got dissed, I think.
Ouch. Yeah, ouch. I squish
All right,
you.
Go on, math boy.
I squish you.
I'm going to subtract your comment. Hundreds of scientists, mathematicians have tried to figure this thing out. And finally, this guy, he's a Russian immigrant to Israel, and he hadn't been able to find work as a mathematician when he got there. He'd been working as a security guard. But finally, he found work as a mathematician, had been working on this problem, and figured it out. To be honest, Tricia, I don't really understand it. But they talk about the applications of this problem, and I thought it was really interesting. The solution, one application... let's say you're lost in a town and you've never been there before and you have to get to a friend's house and there are no street signs. The directions will work no matter what.
Ooh,
what?
I like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I know.
That's
I know.
Amazing.
What? That was worth the payoff.
Yes.
That was
yeah.
worth it.
I
need those
kind of directions. I don't know if that's Boston.
Wait, isn't that called GPS?
Yeah.
I'm just asking.
Caitlin Kenny, you're up next.
Speaking of Boston, Dan, I have one of the most emailed stories at the Boston Globe. This is actually about a college student at Duke. His name is Josh Schummer, and he's suffering from chordoma, which is a rare cancer that strikes just 300 people a year. The thing that's really interesting about Josh is that he's taken a really active role in searching for a cure for his cancer, and he found the only person in the country who has a grant to study this disease happens to be at Duke, across the street. Mm. So he went over, started working with him in the lab, and right now he's trying to work on the cells to help other people figure out how to solve his disease. He's already recruited at least half a dozen labs at the school in fields like radiology, oncology, and genetics to help him out. And he and his mother have already started a chordoma foundation. So he's just working really hard. In fact, he's taking this semester off so he can spend more time in his research and more time in the foundation. So
oh, wow.
It's just a really cool story
Amazing
about someone.
Story.
Yeah.
Okay, all BPP listeners, send good vibes to Josh.
Yeah.
Good
vibes
my
Josh.
Most popular is from Wired.com. It says, breaking the rules, Apple succeeds by defying five core Valley principles. And the article basically is off the catchphrase of Google, how Google's famous internal working catchphrase is, don't be evil. And that's become shorthand in Silicon Valley. Well, this writer, Leander Caney, says, you know what? Apple has broken every one of those rules.
Oh, no.
And that's how they're successful.
I know where this is going.
I'll give you just two of them. The first rule in the Valley is cooperate. Embrace open platforms. Software should be decoupled for hardware users can use it. Apple's rule, design software to work only on your own hardware and not anyone else's, i.e. the iPhone applications only on the iPhone. The number two rule is communicate. Design software to work on your own. Tell fans what you're up to so they feel connected to your company. Hiring difficulties, new strategies, blog about them. Apparently at Apple, the rule is never talk to the press, shut down rumor blogs. And then she goes on, threaten to sue children who send you their ideas. The other three rules are play nice, love your customers, and coddle your employees. I'll let you read those when you come to our blog.
Well, so who's right? The people who wrote the rules or the people who defied the rules to great success?
Good question. Tricia?
So I looked at the Google Trends. Among the top 10 was Belmont, which, of course, is the university that almost beat Duke. I'm really out of my wheelhouse here. I'm talking basketball. I'm like, oh, please, please let me not be completely wrong. Anyway, they almost beat Duke, the number 2 seed in the NCAA tournament. Belmont is apparently the number 15 seed, and so they almost upset them, but but Duke came back to win by 1 point. And apparently, you know, I guess everybody's brackets would have just, you know, cracked if Belmont had won.
It was
so
a good game.
So close.
A lot of toughness. Belmont fought hard. It was unfortunate. Janie and I were rooting for. We're rooting for Belmont.
That voice, of course, belongs to producer Dan Pastrana.
That's me, yes. Hey guys.
And so, well, anyway, as I spoke about brackets, you know, my daughter is not gambling, but she has picked her first NCAA bracket. And I wonder who she picked to win that Duke-Belmont game.
Duke or Belmont?
Duke.
All right, good job, Cassie.
I got one.
Yeah, we got this thing going on here on the show, sort of trying to test the limits of how much luck is involved in picking an NCAA tournament bracket. We're matching Trisha's 4-year-old daughter, Cassie, up against Allison's husband, BPB sports guy, and former ESPN guy, Bill Wolf.
15-year veteran in the sports business.
That's
against
right.
A 4-year-old.
Hey, she got one right.
Right. So I have the results in from the first night of competition. Bill is leading Cassie right now 13-3.
Oh, it's an outrage.
Yeah, Cassie, I looked over her bracket, Trish. She has some pretty interesting picks here. You know, in the entire history of the NCAA tournament, no number 16 seed has ever beaten a number 1 seed.
Okay.
Cassie picked all 4 number 1 seeds to lose to all 4 number 16 seeds.
That's my girl.
She believes in the little guy.
But there is still hope for Cassie because she picked a number 7 seed called Butler to go all the way to the finals, which if that happens, I think she could beat Bill because Bill did not pick Butler to go very far.
Let's say we were like actually gambling. Would we win a lot of money or what?
Yes. I think if Butler were to go as far as Cassie has predicted, it would go far. And, of course, I think it's interesting to note why Cassie – or rather, yes, you win a lot of money. It's interesting to note why Cassie picked Butler. She has an interesting criteria for some of her picks. Let's hear the audio of that pick.
Butler.
Gotta make her laugh.
That's right.
All right. We'll be checking back. And, Trisha, for the record, we tried to give Cassie – a little extra points for helping. And what did you say?
I refused. I want an even playing field.
We were going to handicap it.
Yeah.
All right. Trisha McKinney, Dan, Caitlin, thanks a lot. We do have one more most. We did an interview recently that shot to the top of NPR's most emailed list, maybe because the headline was Christian sex toys. I mean, wouldn't you send that to your friend? A woman named Joy Wilson wanted something to spice up her marriage without compromising her Christian beliefs. And she really didn't have a whole lot of luck, so she decided to start a website/store called book22.com. The name refers to the Song of Solomon. Now, Joy Wilson was honest, open, and really frank about her personal and now professional life selling Christian marital aids.